This is Carl Campbell. I'm about to interview Mr. Ed Mann, who is the chairman of the board of OWASA. The date is July 18, 1986. The interview will take place in Mr. Mann's office in Orange Federal Bank in downtown Chapel Hill. As we go along, let me start by just asking you a little bit about your background. You are from Chapel Hill?
Yeah, you want to know, my father and mother lived in Carrboro. Huh. My father was born in Carrboro. My father's father was Thomas Newton Mann, and he was the mayor, chief of police, and postmaster for Carrboro for a number of years. Hmm. And he moved to Carrboro from out in the Browns Chapel community. You ever heard of Chicken Bridge? Mm-hmm. Over on the other side of Chicken Bridge is a convergence of, it's on the Hall River, it's at the convergence of Orange County, Alamance County, and Chatham County. There was a settlement out there that one time was called Mandale. There were so many Manns out there.
Huh.
And my family, for like five or six generations back, can be traced back to that cemetery out there in Browns Chapel. In fact, a couple of my great-great-grandfathers were ministers of that church out there. Mm-hmm. See, so my family is native to this area.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife's family, of course, Senator Stanford, or Representative Richard Stanford, who was a congressman, and he was buried in the cemetery, one of the few congressmen who's actually buried up there in the Capitol.
Hmm, really?
See, he's actually buried up there. Was the one who acquired all that land originally.
When would that have been?
Years
about?
Ago. Charles could tell you all this stuff, okay. But this has been five or six generations back.
Okay.
And the Stanfords have been native to that location for that long.
Mm-hmm.
So both of our families kind of go back to this area. When we first moved out there, I used to live in Chapel Hill, and my kids were all born in Chapel Hill, but we moved out there and renovated a house on the farm to be close to her mother and father in their declining years, because they both got in poor health, and we got to about 16 years. But when we first went out there, we started attending a little church called Bethlehem Presbyterian Church, which is the old family church. And when I went out there, my wife was introducing me around, as people said, "Oh, are you related to old Dr. Ed Mann?" Because my great-grandfather was Dr. E.D. Mann, and he was, they just didn't have doctors like we have today. This is people who went to school for 6 months and were doctors.
Hmm.
And they knew how to use leeches and boil potions. And,
hmm.
And they were mostly midwives and this kind of thing, you know. And because childbirth is very dangerous. And the cemeteries are just loaded with people who you see that died when somebody was born. Just lots of that stuff.
Yeah.
But my great-grandfather was old Dr. Ed Mann, and so many of the people out in that Cane Creek area asked me, "Are you in any relation to old Dr. Ed?" Because they knew of him, you know.
And he wasn't an actual doctor.
He was a medical doctor, you know. He was just as qualified as any of the others were at that time. But what I'm trying to say is they don't go to school. They didn't go to school then like they do now.
He was
a college graduate, but I think he was in med school for like 6 months or a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so you must have been accepted right into the community right off.
I had no
because
problem
you had
whatsoever.
The family
See,
credentials.
That was it. See, I wasn't an outsider.
That's good.
That kind of, and ended up being real active in that church ever since. That's our family church now. Mm. So.
Some of the other people at Cane Creek go to that church too, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, there are two or three churches that serve that community. And the Stanfords and the Tears and the Lashleys up on Maven Oaks Road.
Mm-hmm.
Are the three big families that support that church, and then there's a whole lot of other people. And we get a lot of people who like that little church, and they're going to call their chapel here, come out there.
Yeah.
Because they like it.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
But it's basically an old Stanford Tier, and the Stanfords and Tiers are connected. They're first cousins. They got common grandparents back there.
Yeah.
But the Lashleys over across the way over there, the people who basically feed that church.
Some of the Snipes are related
Snipes
with
are,
that too, aren't they?
Yeah,
there's some intermarrying a few generations.
Yeah, Snipes and Tears, and they go back to kind of a common family back there.
Hmm.
Charles Snipes, and you might have interviewed him.
I think we might have. Yeah.
Okay. Charles's mother was Mr. Charlie Tears' sister.
Hmm.
Mr. Charlie Tear and my father-in-law, Mr. Stanford, were first cousins. So they tell you, oh, like great-great-grandfather in common or something like that.
That's interesting. It seems to be a tight-knit community. Is it still a tight-knit community? Has it,
yes
I mean,
and no. Yes and no. On one level, it is. On the level of, When they have showers for somebody going to get married or anniversary celebrations, or those family-type church homecomings, those things that are kind of family-related, it's very tight-knit. I mean, you know, when the Cane Creek controversy arose out there, WASA first started talking about going out there, there was a Cane Creek Conservation Authority, which was a group, a small group of people, a very small group, who were leading the fight to keep out the outsiders, this kind of thing. And they would have every year the Cane Creek Fair or the Farm City Day or some different social function out there. Total support. I mean, that's a social type, help out, barn burning type thing. Total support. But you can, on another level, know, on politics, for instance, if you start trying to form a volunteer fire company, which involves setting up a fire district, which involves a tax, there's not any homogeneity there. You get certain groups, like the White Cross community is separate than the Orange Grove community, see. And the Lashley, I mean, some of it has to do with the fact that I think farmers are just basically shy, withdrawing type people. And when you start talking about, I mean, family is something that cuts across lines, you know, and need and, and this sort of thing. But when you start talking about politics, or you start talking about religion, I mean, you're talking about something that really divides people. You know, there's not that total homogeneity. The Cane Creek community probably votes, I mean, the old Cane Creek people probably all vote alike. They probably all vote the same people.
Who do you think they would vote for? Are they Democrats?
It depends on, no, I don't think they identify it that way. I think if they'll vote for Jesse Helms, for instance.
Okay.
See?
So it's more of a shared political outlook?
It's the old Southern conservative. I don't know what was that, the Whigs or the Tories, but it was the old Southern conservative. See, a lot of people say the Republican Party is where the whole Southern Democratic Party used to be. Yeah, a lot
That's
of people
right.
say that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there's a whole lot in the Republican Party that the old Southern Democratic Party used to hold their deal. And so it kind of cuts across party line, but basically Democrat. Because most of North Carolina is Democrat. And most of our North Carolina leaders, it's almost like a lot of other, you know, in state elections they vote Democrat, and national elections they vote Republican.
That's certainly true. Mm-hmm. That's certainly true. That's what Mr. Edmondson was talking a lot about when I spoke with him, because that's what sunk him. Well, out there, do you think that their political views have been affected by this controversy? Did it change them, or did it kind of bounce off?
No, I think it, I don't know if it's a permanent change or not. I think it did change them. I noticed a change in the very beginning when it was the University of North Carolina that was looking out at Cane Creek as a possible water source. See, that was identified as a future water source by the university study.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody was afraid of the university. Beloved University just is not controversial. And for somebody to think that the University of North Carolina is going to provide him to build a reservoir on the Cane Creek was exciting. I was involved in a new volunteer fire company, the Orange Grove Volunteer Fire Company, which was just getting started. And everybody was excited. The Snipes's and the Tears and the Stanfords and Ed Johnson, who was the leader of the Cane Creek Conservation Authority, was real involved in Orange Grove Volunteer Fire Company. And we all were delighted that the university was going to come out here. There was a nice reservoir, which would not only be attractive, but would be a source of water in times of drought for irrigation. We could get access to water for firefighting. Very nice.
When would that have been?
I can't tell you the dates. That's back pre-Owassa.
Okay,
but
so
it was about the time
70s.
Of Owassa. See, Owassa was formed out of a political controversy sort of thing. And people say the university needs to get out of utility business. And the legislature, you know, and the Howard Lee Chapel Hill campaign was involved in some of this stuff. And it was a political thing where the university was kind of forced to divest itself.
It was 76. Yeah, okay.
Owassa was formed. Owassa was formed. Now, Owassa was very political when it was first formed, because you had Hillsborough, Chapel Hill, and Conborough who were forming this thing and appointing the representatives, and they didn't trust each other. I mean, in the beginning, it was something like 7 people on the Owassa board, 3 appointed by Chapel Hill, 2 by Conborough, and 2 by Orange County, but that didn't give Chapel Hill majority control. And so they went back and had it changed to be 5 from Chapel Hill, and 2 from Hillsborough, and 2 from Farborough, because now Chapel Hill, it was that kind of thing. And, mm-hmm. the first WASA board was made up of elected officials. I mean, the 5 from Chapel Hill were 5 aldermen, mm-hmm. 5 town councilmen. The 2 from Cobra were 2 elected councilmen. The 2 from Hillsborough, from Orange County, were 2 county commissioners. So the first original board for WASA was made up of elected officials. And they didn't, I mean, they didn't have standing committees. They just were very, they wanted to be in on everything. And so when we had the very first meeting out in the Orange Grove Community Building, where WASA said, we want to have a meeting with the community. We want to tell the community what our plans are. We want to let the community give us some reaction. Let's have our first community meeting mm-hmm. about the Cane Creek Reservoir. Everybody was just fine, you know. And the first person to speak was an engineer, called Muddy Waters. I can't remember what his first name was, but he's an engineer with Allen Waters. Smart guy. I mean, the people just called him Muddy. But Allen mm-hmm. Waters was like university engineer, and he stood up and started talking. Flo Garrett was a county commissioner, and she was the first chairman of the WASA board. And Flo was very political, like a lot of those elected officials are very political. And she started talking, and those people out there heard. This is what they heard. They heard somebody come out saying, here's what we're going to do. They didn't say, here's what we're thinking about doing. We want to know what you think. They said, here's what we're going to do. Well, it's kind of funny because before that meeting was over, somebody in the community, I think it was Bobby Kirk, stood up and said, just as soon as this meeting's over, there's going to be another meeting. And so they had their first meeting of the Cane Creek Conservation Authority. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't have named it at that time.
Yeah.
But that was an outgrowth, because when I say we, I mean Chapel Hill, mm-hmm. you know, the WASA group botched it. They went out there and got us off on the wrong foot. They went out there and condescended. They went out there and talked down to those people. They went out there and they said, here's what we're going to do. When they had told them, we're interested in you. We don't know what you think. We don't have any advisory committee and all this kind of stuff. And then they came out there and they didn't do it that way.
Hmm. Were you at that first meeting where...
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. And I wasn't involved in anything. I was just a member of the Orange Grove Volunteer Fire Company, worked at Orange Federal Savings Alone, lived, married to the Stamps, lived out there. I was not involved in any... I might have been on Chapel Hill Housing Authority. I've been involved in a lot of things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Recreation Commission. Kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
but
what was your reaction that night when you heard that?
None. I didn't have a reaction. I realized that some of the natives were getting restless, but I know them personally, and I understand mm-hmm. that certain people just react to things in different ways. And I know that, for instance, Ed Johnson, whom I went to high school with, I think it was Ed Johnson, because his dad was a professor, and we've known him for a long time. But Ed originally was very pro WASA,
mm-hmm.
very pro WASA, because he really saw all the opportunities out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think as Ed went along and saw that, hey, they're not treating us right. They're not going to take these people in the conference out of you. They're not going to let these people be a part of planning. You know, they're not interested in what these people think you ought to do and this kind of stuff. Then Ed said, I not only don't like it, but I think these people out here need some help. And so I'm going to help him. And so he really was the leader. Hmm. He really was the darn leader. He was the head of the Volunteer Fire Company, so he kind of had some community validity, even though he was a Chapel Hill professor living out there. So he nevertheless had some community validity because he was real active and president of the Orange Grove Volunteer Fire Company, and they liked him for that. He was willing, and you know, he was Dr. Johnson. Now, farmers look at PhDs, the doctors, and I mean, that's just almost on equal with a medical doctor. There's someone that they hold a lot of respect for, Dr.
Sure.
Johnson. So I said, mm-hmm. Dr. Johnson was willing to help us with our fire company, and now he's going to help us, maybe, and he's smart enough to talk to the city slicker in Chapel Hill. So.
See, that's really interesting to us, that the ties between the communities, Chapel Hill and Cane Creek, go over and over, and you're in that too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
same
you
thing.
Eventually
mm-hmm.
became involved with WASA, but you lived in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have difficulties with that connection?
Yeah, and the way I got involved with the WASA is kind of interesting. Ann Barnes, who's now Representative Ann Barnes in the legislature from lives in Chapel Hill. Ann and I were friends going back to the old Chapel Hill Recreation Department. She and I both were commissioners on the Chapel Hill Recreation. We both helped set up the Orange County Recreation Program, and so we knew each other. She was a county commissioner. And she called me up and she said, "We got to appoint, you know, we have to appoint two people, and we are getting a lot of pressure to appoint somebody from the Cane Creek area. And I want to know if you feel like you could give us a balanced approach to this thing. You really could represent the people of Cane Creek at the same time be open-minded about a lot of things since you're in Chapel. Would you be willing?" So I said, "I think so, but let me check around." So I, you know, talked to my wife about it a little bit and talked to some of my friends that I ran into and just told them, like the tears, you know, "I've got the opportunity to get involved in this thing, and I know it's going to be controversial. Nevertheless, I think maybe I'll be in position to get some input and to be sensitive to some of the issues out here, and I think it's probably a good thing." So we decided I'd do it. And so I just kind of got involved in it. And you know, the longer you stay, the higher you rise to the top. And it finally got to be my turn to be the chairman. So I'm the chairman now.
When did you become the chairman?
David Moreau was the previous chairman. And David is a professor in the school of planning, city planning, or whatever over there. And he's also a water specialist, and he's also very involved with state programs. And I think now most of what he does is he's director of some institute over in Raleigh for the state that has to do with water resources. And has probably a point on a faculty over here, but I don't think he spends as much time on the faculty as he does in Raleigh this time. Well, David is kind of like an expert. He's one of our resident experts in this thing. And so he was the chairman. He was uniquely qualified to be the chairman because of his expertise and knowledge. And I was the vice chairman, and he was absent a lot, and so I had to fill in for him a whole lot. And then when his workload got to be such that he really just had to start step down, I guess I was a logical choice because I had been there longer and had been serving as the vice chairman, and it just comes a natural sort of thing. And then once you get into these positions, I think people are comfortable in leaving you there as long as you're willing. It's not something you covet and want to do because it's a little bit controversial.
When did you begin the position? Has it been 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, I've been chairman. I'm probably finishing up my second year. Mm-hmm. We do elections on the board in September. That's when our corporate year starts, and I think I'll be finishing up my second year as chairman.
Okay, and so you first got on Owassa. Must have been 10 years ago.
Not so that long. More like 7 or 6.
Okay. So right around 78, 79.
Something like that, yeah.
Because that meeting that you talked about at the Orange Grove Community Center was 76.
It was after that, well after that. Okay. I'm still active in the Orange Grove Volunteer Fire. I was the treasurer of the Orange Grove Volunteer Fire for a long time.
Well, did back to that problem with you, did the community begin to feel hostile towards you once you became involved with OASA?
Well, so many of the people out there on the other side, and when I say, here I was at OASA, and the other side was Cane Creek Conservation Charter. I mean, Thomas and Evelyn, too. Okay. Evelyn, I went to school with Evelyn from junior high days, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just knew Evelyn that long. Carolyn Schatz, who's now Carolyn, Johnny's her husband, Lloyd. Carolyn Lloyd was very active. She was like the secretary. And Carolyn Schatz, you know, she did Chapel Hill, and I knew, went to school with her and her sisters, and none of those people a long time. But Ed Johnson, I knew her a long time. In fact, you know, Ed and I were kind of sort of antagonists. Not really. I never was an antagonist to them, but I mean, we were in a virtual position. But still, he and I were still running the Orange Grove Volunteer Fire Company together. And good friends, you know, different levels. I mean, it's like putting on different hats.
Yeah.
You know, most of the time we're just all good friends. Every now and then something, a hearing, some court action, something happens, and then you put this hat on, I'm a WASA, and I'm Cane Creek Conservation Authority, and we don't like each other. It's very hard for me to, but one time I perceived that, by virtue of my position with WASA, I perceived that that things were coming to a head as far as legal processes were concerned. And so I went to one of the King Creek Conservation Authority meetings over at Carolyn Lloyd's house and asked to be on the agenda. And I felt like the proverbial whore in church. You know, I really felt like I was the enemy in a strange land. You know, Harold was sitting there, and those people, my friends, my neighbors, you know, were sitting as a meeting of the King Creek Conservation Authority in here, and my wife was acting in it.
Oh, really?
Yes. You know, and here I was sitting here, but I had come to them, you know, as a representative of the enemy to say something to them. And I really felt bad. Really felt funny. That's the one time, I guess, I really felt like it, that we really had a wall there. And so I told those folks that I felt like that this thing was winding down fairly fast and that we were coming to a point where different landowners were going to have to look after their interest, that they weren't going to be able to, you know, subjugate their interest to the interest of the King Creek Conservation Authority, which was trying to do some things, because it was too much at stake for the individual landowners. And the individual landowners were going to have to make some decisions that affected their lives and their families for the future. And they really just couldn't keep hanging on and fighting. And so I think they needed to recognize that, and they needed to realize that, you know, there were some opportunities still. There were still some opportunities for settlements, for deals, for arrangements, for having input in stuff. And that I was so afraid that if they went too long, they were going to lose what bargain position that they had, and I wanted to urge them to take advantage of the opportunity. And so as soon as I sat down, somebody stood up and offered a rebuttal. You know, Bobby Kirk or something, I can't remember. But somebody stood up and offered a rebuttal to what I said, which just totally negated it, because I had come there for, so I kind of stole away.
Yeah.
My wife was real active, you know, but she was awkward. She felt a real strong obligation. She was a Stanford, and my wife genuinely did not want to see the King Creek flooded. Mm-hmm. My wife was raised on the King Creek. Her mother built little cabins down there and had little dams and flowers planted, and that's where my wife grew up, and my wife genuinely does not want to see that destroyed, and she still doesn't want to see it destroyed. And so she was really an opponent to this idea. Nevertheless, my wife was my wife, and, you know, and she knew that there was two sides to the issue, and that she had to be a little bit flexible on it. And so she was all, and plus she knew that the Stanfords, once the Stanfords made a deal with Owosso to sell some land, my wife felt real funny, because we got letters from people saying, "You sold out."
Hmm.
So we got letters from people that were very good friends saying, and we would see letters to the editor written by some representative get printed in the newspaper, and it was something called a Creek Walker, a little community newsletter that came around, and it would have little provocative. I think one of the things that Sammy Crawford. I think one of the things that Sammy Crawford. You may know him.
I've met him.
He's a very talented guy. PhD, you know, in English, writes well. Okay, he wrote the Creek Walker, and he had a talent. He'd be a good labor organizer because he has a talent for saying things in such a way as to stimulate you to the way he wants to stimulate you. You know, and if he wants to keep up the battle, let's keep everybody fresh, and we still hope that we're gonna lick this thing. We're still working for a common purpose. You know, the Creek Walker was written with that in mind, and so he would write that. And he would make statements about the Stanfords, about the Stanfords selling out for the proverbial seven pieces of silver. You know, he would make statements that hurt.
Yeah.
You know, it hurt. And I knew why he was doing it, and I don't really hold it against him. He had a job to do.
Yeah.
Everything at King Creek Conservation Authority organization was held together with spit and string and chewing gum anyhow. Ed Johnson and Sandy Crawford were the guts of it, you know, and what they did is, anyway, there were levels at which there was a separation and antagonism But, you know, I mean, I would go to church and I'd sit beside of Evelyn Tier, and we'd talk about families, and her kids would come over and use my swimming pool, and they'd give us sweet corn, and, you know, I mean, well, mostly we were still neighbors and friends, but there was a level at which we didn't talk to each other. And we wouldn't talk about the topic, you know. We would, in polite conversation, we wouldn't bring up any controversy and things like that. It split the family, too. I mean, it not only split... say me from the community and the Stanford family from the community when they moved there, but also within the Stanford family. I mean, you get these families, and the Tier family also, you know, are kind of divided in their attitudes about this thing. You know, just like a lot of other things, families are complicated. I mean, in the Stanford family, you've got Bill Stanford, who's a dairy farmer. You've got Charles Stanford, who is Princeton graduate, or, you know, totally different. Really, really live in the community. And you got my wife, who lives there. You got my wife's twin sister, who lives in Charlotte, North Carolina, whose husband is in education. A little bit different when you don't live here. And then we got another brother who died, Donald Stanford. Donald was a county commissioner. Donald was a representative in Raleigh. He died, and his wife was appointed to take place, Trish Stanford, and she remarried Hunt. She's now Judge Hunt. Trish Stanford Hunt. She's now a judge, but she's been in the legislature before she was appointed to judge. But she's in the family too, see? And so you get different points of view in the family, and so, and when the family has to make the deal with a WASA, I mean, you just get, somebody told me one time that the worst thing that can happen to a family is for a father and mother to die and leave them a whole bunch of property, which has to be divided up. But that's the worst thing that can happen, because it brings out the worst, which is in all of us, anyhow. You know. And that's true. I mean, I know that that's true. I've seen it in the Stanford family. I've also seen it in the Tier family. Because the same thing, you know, Mr. Charlie Tier's not dead, but he's getting very old and declining health, and so there has been some... And Mr. Charlie's brother, Tom Tier, did die, and it was necessitated his estate being settled. And I mean, it's just a lot of strain.
I guess the problem with the Stanford farm would be that there is one farm to divide among many interests, and some of those interests wouldn't want a farm.
Yeah, and there's just differences of opinion. There's kind of a philosophy in farm families. It goes back to the old things that you read from early history about who inherits the farm. Well, it used to be the oldest son got it all. Mm-hmm. So if you look back in the Bible and in our early history in this country and the way property was handed down from generation to generation, it's kind of like who's the king in England? Well, it's the oldest son who's next in line. Well, that's the old notion, is that the oldest surviving son inherited it all, and the other sons and daughters maybe got personal property. Maybe mom's furniture and stuff was back in there, you know. But the oldest son. Well, then it got to be the sons. I mean, because the natural successor of a farm is from father to sons, because the sons run the farm, and the daughters go out and get married to doctors or something like that. PhD. So it was kind of natural to assume that, you know, the Stanford farm is going to be left to Stanford boys. The Tier farm is going to be left to Tier boys. The Snipes farm is going to be left to the Snipes boys. The Lashley farm is going to be left to the Lashley boys. Because that's the way it always was in the previous generation. Mm-hmm. But it isn't that way anymore. I mean, it's changed. We have a cultural change that people have to look at it. Everybody shares a lot now. We got laws that even say that. Mm-hmm. See? And so that presents some problems, because you've got farmers who get so close to the land, they work it, they spend their life's blood in it, and you mean I am here but one-fifth of it? Hell, I'm the only one here that's farming it. And I've been farming this thing all my life, and I'm not going to get but one-fifth of it? You know, I mean, that's basically the conflict right there.
And farm won't work with just a fifth of the farm.
And that's right. I mean, in the first place, I don't feel like it's, you know, if I'm Bill Stanford, Bill Stanford is the last remaining Stanford who is a farmer. there, and he cultivates all that acreage out there. He grows cows out there. You know, none of the others do that. And you mean, I'm not going to get but a fifth? And the hardest thing is pay. I mean, you know, it doesn't seem fair to him. Okay, so that's basic. Secondly, well, what if, you know, what if we do it? How am I going to continue to leave these all this land? You know, people in Charlotte own part of it, judges in South Louisiana own part of it, and Sings own people that own part of it. Next thing you know, it's going to be developed and sold, and it's the end of my life. So just, you start dividing up a farm, it really is like the end of an era. Mm-hmm. You know, it really is. And the old family farm thing really is a strong part of our culture. And I really sympathize with people who have to do it. I'm a part of one. Still have divided it.
Oh, really?
Mr. Stanford has been dead a good little while now. 12 or 14 years. Still have not divided.
How much of the land did they sell to Owosseton?
I don't know, something like 175 acres right out of the guts of the old Stanford farm. Bill Stanford owned some other land where he lived, and he owned some land on the other side of the creek, which he had gotten from the McKeever family. And the McKeevers, there's another big family name out there, and the McKeever families are closer.